All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and what you can do to stop them. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. Man, this feels so weird doing this alone. Okay, so tonight's a little bit different. Tonight is supposed to be our third episode of Debate Me, You Coward. I think tonight's coward is a little bit too scared to show up. This is the show where I pick fights with random people on the internet and invite them to debate me face to face, almost, so they can't just hide behind their keyboards in an underground bunker of their mom's house throwing out insults like racist, fascist, and moron. That was funny how I mixed up the letters there. So tonight's coward was supposed to be this guy named Ron Combs, if that is his real name, and I doubt it is, because he's hiding behind a Twitter profile that doesn't even have a picture on it, doesn't have many posts, doesn't have many followers, so he didn't want to show up. So what I did tonight instead is I actually put the link. So we do these on Zoom, and I put the link to the Zoom call in the live stream description. So if you feel like joining tonight, you can actually click that link and get in, and I will bring you on. So this is a free for all. All subjects are fair game. Debate me, you coward. Just click the link, join the Zoom call. Now, of course, if you're watching the live stream before we get started, make sure to share this, invite your friends, start a watch party. This could get interesting. I have no idea what to expect. And tonight's episode is, of course, brought to you by the Nug of Knowledge, indoor-grown, chemical-free, smokable hemp flower and Delta 8 vape cartridges. Get elevated at nugofknowledge.com. And now on to the show. Alec is joining us. Let's get Alec in here and see how this goes. All right. He's connecting. He's connecting his audio.
Hello.
There we go.
Oh, okay. Yay.
All right.
So, I mean, we agree on pretty much everything. I don't know what I debate you on.
Well, that makes for a lame show.
Should I play devil's advocate, like, just for fun?
Yeah, sure. Why not? That'll be fun.
Okay, so... Like, since you're a libertarian, like, we agree on pretty much everything. It's a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech.
Well, I mean, somebody's got to advocate for the devil.
I guess. That's what a Satanist is. That's what a Satanist is.
No, Satanists are actually extremely libertarian, as a matter of fact.
I mean, I imagine some of them are, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we could debate about that if you want.
I mean, if we did, you'd probably win, but I don't really care.
That's an interesting thing, because like all we know is like what we've been told about Satanists, and you actually meet them and you actually learn what they're about, and you've got two churches. You've got the Satanic. The Church of Satan and the Temple, no, and the Satanic Temple or something like that. There's two different, and so, yeah. And apparently they have totally different views too, which is interesting because it's like the divergence between like Christianity and Catholicism. But yeah, they're actually really great people, and there's a whole story to it that's so much better than the garbage you hear on TV about like, ooh, Satanists.
Are you a Satanist?
No, okay. I'm kind of I fall under the agnostic or atheist category somewhere in there.
I mean, like, I'm not sure if God exists, but like it could, I've changed my religion a lot over the years. Sometimes I was very religious. Sometimes I was completely atheist. Like
one, I heard one person say from a religious group one time, and this was actually really good. If there is a God, or if there is one true religion, then there can only be one truth, and that truth must be the same for everyone. So even if somebody is worshiping a God that doesn't exist, so all these people worshiping all these gods, only one of them can actually exist, or theoretically, I guess, especially if you believe that there can only be one. But whatever the truth has to be the same for all people. And so if somebody is believing something that's not in accordance with your own religion, there's absolutely no benefit to you in condemning them for doing so, because at the end of the day, they're just a person with a wrong opinion, as long as they're not trying to harm anybody with that wrong opinion.
Yeah, like, I mean, did you hear the story of the elephant and the blind men?
Remind me.
Okay, so there are these blind men in some really warm country where there's a bunch of elephants. And so they were walking towards this guy's palace. So there's these six blind men, right? And they all go to this elephant. So one of the blind men feels the elephant's ears. He's like, hey guys, an elephant is like a fan. It keeps you cool. Another blind man was on his knees feeling the elephant's leg. He says, hey guys, no, you're completely wrong. An elephant is hard and sturdy like a tree. Another blind man was feeling the elephant's tail, and he also smelt a fart. And that elephant, and then that, yeah. And then that blind man was like, hey guys, both of you are wrong. An elephant smells and it's like a rope. And then this king comes by, he sees these blind men observing, he sees these blind men touching these elephants. He's like, hey guys, you're all right. So in our example, in our real world, one of the blind men was seeing was a Christian who was like, hey guys, Jesus is this. Another blind man was like, hey guys, no, Jesus is this. He wants you to fast every month for Ramadan, and he wants you to pray 5 times a day to Mecca. That was the guy who happened to see the Muslim part of God. Same with the Hindu version, same with the Buddhist version. So that's
that's very, very true. It's all about perspective. And it's interesting, too, because this is really all about it's the same kind of thing with government and with politicians and all this other stuff, right? Like, some people are like, oh, this politician is great. And then everybody else is like, no, that politician sucks. And it all has to do with, well, what do you want from government? What do you want from your politicians? Because, yeah, if they're giving away free stuff, then all the people who want the free stuff are going to say, yeah, that guy's great. And everybody who hate free stuff because they know the cost are going to say, no, that guy sucks. And it really is all about that perspective, which is really the basis for the argument that we should not be so tied to government that it dictates all of our lives and forces us all to have the same life, because we all want different things.
Yeah, we all want different things. Like, I want a YouTube channel that's pretty prevalent when I'm older, but my main job, I want to be an actuary. You probably are into something different. We can't have the government like taking money from people and giving it to people who don't want to contribute. And it's like, there's all these people that are so concerned about homelessness, but like, actions speak louder than words. If you're so concerned about homeless people, adopt a homeless person. Don't force the state to do it.
Right. But on top of that, though, I think this is an important point that's really missed a lot. And that's that the homelessness itself is created by government, because ultimately, like, this is one thing that's always been offensive to me is, you know, when you see somebody in court, like in a movie, and they're like, and you must become a productive member of society and get gainful employment and all this other shit. And it's like, wait a minute. What are we running here? A slave farm? Like, why should everybody be forced to have a job just to stay out of jail? And like, yes, I get it. If you're doing your job, you're not going to be like, you know, running around stealing and doing whatever else, you know, criminal basically, to survive. The idle hands argument, idle hands are the devil's workshop. But at the same time, every individual has the right to be a lazy bum if they want. The thing is, in most places in the world, especially where there's very little government, you can be a lazy bum and you can still survive, right? You won't have a very high quality of life, which is the reason we work, right? We work to improve our lives. But in when we have big government and we have big taxes, we don't work to improve our lives anymore. We work just to barely stay where we're at, which is, you know, they keep telling us below a poverty line. And we're barely treading water. We're on a hamster wheel. We're in the rat race. And that's all because of the government and the taxes. And they really have a brilliant system because they have everybody fooled, because even the poor people think that they're not paying any taxes. It's only the rich people who are paying taxes. But no, most of the taxes that the government collects comes from poor people.
I mean, you're kind of not wrong. Like, there's three groups of people. Like, there's poor people, there's middle class people, and there's rich people. The poor people, if they work a minimum wage job, they pay 18% of their money to the government. If you're middle class, you're paying probably like 28% of your money to the government. If you're rich, since you dodge all these taxes, you're not paying anything to the government. So that's why I want to repeal the income tax so nobody pays it and replace it with a sales tax and a capital gains tax. Then everything the government needs can be funded through consensual taxes.
You had me until replace it with a fair tax. But here's the thing that's interesting about that, because if you ask people how much do they pay in taxes, they'll usually tell you whatever they think they're paying in income tax, and that's the end of the discussion. But here's the thing, and these are pre-COVID numbers. The American payroll is $8.5 trillion, and the government collects $7.5 trillion. So ultimately, they're taxing all of us at 88%, which is absolutely insane.
And I don't think those numbers are true.
Those numbers come directly from the government.
Oh, like, I think I need a link because I need to figure out how to open this. Do you know how to share a screen on here?
Here. I'm going to have to.
Yeah, because like on my computer, like your screen's pretty small.
You should have a share screen button at the bottom. So this is the other thing. Consider this. You're making $12,000 a year.
And well, most people make more than that. I did the calculations. If you work minimum wage working 40 hours a week, you make $14. You make $14,000 a year. Okay. $7.25 an hour times 2,000 hours a year. That's $14,500 a year.
Okay. So let's say you're making $14,000 and now you have to make a car registration payment, and let's just say it's $150. What percentage is that of your income?
1%.
Right. Now, somebody making $1 million a year who has to pay $150, or let's say they even have a nicer car and a higher tax rate, they have to pay $300. What percent of their income is that?
0.03%, roughly.
Right. So now let's talk about property tax. If you're only making $12,000, maybe you're paying $400 a month in rent. How much of that do you think is going towards your landlord's property tax?
Well, the landlord's property tax is their profit, right?
No. That's on top of their profit. So here's the thing. If the landlord has completely paid off his property and he doesn't owe any money on it, he still has to pay a rent to the government for owning that property.
Yeah, that's a property tax, basically.
That is a property tax. So yeah. That property tax is included in your rent.
Yeah.
Because if let's say I'm a landlord and I have to pay the government $200 every month, I'm not just going to eat that. That's going to be another excuse for me to say it's going to cost $200 more.
Yeah, they probably would even end up charging more than $200 because it's not like a landlord's renting out all his properties all the time.
Right. Yeah, he's got to account for months vacant and all this other stuff. So the point is, going down to this, if you compare somebody who's making $15,000 a year and how much of their money is going to the property tax compared to a millionaire and how much of his money is going to the property tax, even though he's paying more, the percentage of their income, the poor person is paying more. Then you've got all kinds of things like traffic tickets. Tickets for having expired registration on your car. Do you know who pay most of those? Poor people, not rich people. Rich people just send in a check as soon as they get the bill. Here's a check.
But those payments are like super rare though. So yeah, the poor people spend a lot on goods and services, but the rich people spend a lot on investments. That kind of evens things out.
Right, but when you spend money on an investment or when you invest in something, that's still your asset. You're still holding on to that. And when you don't have money and you have to give it to the government, you get nothing back out of that. That's not an investment. That's
I meant the capital gains tax is a tax on investments, and rich people do a whole hell of a lot of investing.
Yeah, but even then, like percentage of income, it's not a lot of money. And so my point is this.
That's not true.
It's a lot of money, but it's not a higher percentage. I mean, think about it. If you're paying, what would somebody pay? Let's say you make $1 million in capital gains. How much are they going to pay on it?
I made a spreadsheet on how to get us out of debt. So in that spreadsheet, it'd be 17%. So they'd be paying $170,000 in money to the government if they made $1,000 off a million bucks off of stock.
Okay, but that's still 17% of their income.
Yeah, and a poor person would only be paying a 14% tax on necessity items. So that's more
but
of a tax.
But a poor person isn't. If they're making capital gains, they're not the poor person we're talking about here who doesn't have any money that's paying all this money to the government.
I could show you my plan. So I call it Operation Get Out of Debt because I'm wanting America to get out of debt, honestly, while providing everyone a tax cut. And that's by making America more open to foreign business, which I think would quadruple our GDP.
I think I like a lot of what I just heard.
Yeah. I mean, like Ronald Reagan supported the idea too. We have Ronald Reagan's immigration plan on steroids. Hold on. I'm wanting how when we're seeing this video, like you see me in a small window.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how to get it so this way I see the small window version of me and then the small version window of you and then the big window version?
I don't know if you can on this one. But are you still trying to share your screen?
Yeah, because I have a link that I'm wanting to post in the chat.
Do you want me to share my screen with the link? Well, no, I can't share my. If I share my screen, you won't be able to see it.
Hold on.
You should be able to share your screen if you want to share your screen.
I don't know how to do this. It's my first time.
Under my video, there's a button that says share screen. It's like a box with an arrow pointing up.
That says exit minimize video.
On the top of the video thing, like the very top like bar on the video, double click that and it should. Just click the button that said exit out of minimized whatever. Yeah. Now you should see the share screen button.
Yeah, there's my link right there to the spreadsheet on how I want to get us out of debt in 4 years while giving everybody a tax cut. And it's very libertarian, I think.
All right. I'll be the judge of that, being the only official real libertarian.
That is not true. Like 5%, like a lot of people, a lot of Americans are libertarians, even if they didn't vote for Joe Jorgensen.
That's what the libertarians keep saying. I'm messing with you. This is libertarian in party trash talk that we always say. There's only one libertarian and it's always me, and you're not a real libertarian because I said so.
Okay,
and
so
everyone else can see it. Okay, cool.
Okay, I still got some work to do on this, but like here's the plan to accomplish the Mad F project. Because I'd be getting Mad F, making America debt free.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, you like the title? So here's the initial salary of people, which our current GDP per capita is around $65,000 per person. And then if low-income people found better paying jobs instead of the minimum wage jobs that they currently have, it would increase the GDP per capita by roughly $7,000, yielding a total of around $72,280 per person per year. So here's what the left gets in exchange for my plan to get us out of debt. Here's what is objectionably good. Here's what the right gets. They get 8 things. Left gets 8 things. 4 things are objectionably good. Everyone has something to gain. The left gets pretty much completely open borders. They get an end to over 99% of unintended pregnancies. They get a more sustainable defense budget, which is only used for 1% of the GDP. They get more money being used for Planned Parenthoods, used for non-abortion services since abortions become obsolete with more funding. A capital gains tax is introduced at the federal level. More racial and religious diversity. Puerto Rico gets hurricane relief and America goes metric from all the metric immigrants. I personally think America should go metric, but yeah, I mean, like, There's no reason.
Those
not
are fighting
to
do words. That's going to create a civil war, man.
It's the freaking metric system. We're not going to have
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. Like, ask any American mechanic who loves working on his Ford or his Chevy, and he'll be complaining about his missing 10 millimeter socket. So, come on, guys, already halfway there.
He could have it be a centimeter socket. That even sounds good. Centimeter socket.
That's a good point, but then you have to call everything else a 0.9 or a 0.8.
Or you just round. Or, like, it's not like they have – they don't have those things in tiny inch units like that. Like, that's, like, 4/10 of an inch. They're
right.
Not
it's so
be
much
like,
better
oh.
than, you know, like, I have a drill bit that's, like, 3/64. Because, like, that's necessary.
I mean, you can call it just a 3/64. Like, just like if I'm taking an AP
Yeah, but why
test
not call it a 3 millimeter?
You're not going to – you don't have to do it like that, but, like – in terms of like what people use for the vast majority of instances, like if we just went metric, things would be a whole lot easier and we'd save money too, because there's so many NASA wasted $500 million because of a bunch of metric to imperial conversion errors. And those $500 million would have been saved if we had just spent $300 million metricizing this nation.
Right. But we would have saved $1 billion if we never had NASA in the first place.
Oh, you want to abolish NASA?
Yeah, why not? I mean, Elon Musk seems to be doing their job pretty well.
I mean, Elon Musk has ambitious goals, and I like Elon Musk. He's a fiery character. I like that. But he's not going to be able to accomplish his goals. He wants 1 million people on Mars by 2050. Not going to happen.
Well, okay, fine. But, I mean... like that's kind of irrelevant, like whether or not he reaches his goals, he's still doing a better job than NASA. And I would argue that it's actually a good thing to have goals that you can't reach, because it's kind of like the whole
you to at least do something decent.
Yeah, shoot for the moon, land in the stars, or whatever they say, shoot for the stars.
Yeah, but like moon. Yeah, but if you have your goal be way too ambitious, you'd be like, I can't get this done. Like,
but
if
he's
you
getting
make
shit
it
done though, you gotta give
like
credit
if you
for that.
If you make I mean, I like him, but like, if you have a goal that's unreasonably high, like if you have a goal to like, let's say get a 1600 on the SAT, you're not going to be able, that's just unreachable for the vast majority of people. Whereas if you have a goal like getting a 1300, you're going to study a little bit more, and then you're going to get closer to, you're going to get so much more closer to that goal than you would your 1600 goal. If you had a 1300 goal for the SAT, you may get 1250 or 1270. If you got a 1600 SAT goal, you may get a 1210 or something.
I would disagree. And let me tell you why. And let me give you a scenario here. And I know a lot of people who would agree with this. So your hypothesis is if you shoot for a 1600, you're not going to study that hard and you're going to get a 1200. But the thing is, if you say I'm going to get a 1600 and you believe you're going to get a 1600 and you study hard enough to get a 1600, you can get the 1600. But if you say, oh, I'm going to get a 1600, and then you're like, yeah, I'm so good, yeah, I don't even need to study, then yeah, you're not really trying, and you're probably lying to yourself about being able to get to that goal. So I think there is a real difference in understanding what the goal is and what you have to do to get there versus just randomly believing in the goal and not putting in the effort to get there. I think that is a huge, huge difference. You talk to like these entrepreneurs and everything, they'll tell you that. Like, it's not enough to like, you know, believe in yourself or do the vision quest or like the manifestation, like a vision board and all that kind of stuff. It's not enough to just do that. You still have to put in the work. And that's,
but if you have a goal for a 1600 SAT, it kind of numbs your brain. If you say like instead, oh, I'm going to study 8 hours a day for the SAT versus, oh, I'm going to study 5 hours a day for the SAT. I mean, the 5 hour SAT goal, studying a day per 5 hours per day, is going to be less ambitious, but you're more likely to actually accomplish that. And you may get closer to that goal, because if you have a goal that's extremely hard to accomplish, you'll be like, you know what, screw this, I can't do it. And then you end up ditching the goal completely. So I think it's good to have reasonable.
That depends on the person. I mean, that varies vastly from person to person. Some people have a high threshold for pain and they can put up with studying for that long. But it's also, you can't directly associate the number of hours you put into studying directly to the score, because you can spend, you know, so let's say you spend 10 hours a day going over math and you never touch like the
reading,
the English and grammar stuff, then of course you're going to fail that side. But if you spend like, you know, if you spend five hours a day and you split it evenly, you're going to do better than the person who put it all in one. So there's really a lot more to strategically understanding, because like, here's the thing, right? If you really, really, really wanted to get that 1600, right? It's not about the hours you spent studying. It's about analyzing, okay, what's going to be on the test? What do I need to know? Where is my weak spot? What can I do to improve that? And figuring out like an actual roadmap to get you there, versus just like, oh, I'm going to go through this book. I'm going to read this book. I'm going to read that book. I'm going to read the Cliff's Notes. I'm going to read this. Like, all that kind of stuff doesn't really help much at all.
Yeah, so I do think it's a good idea to study smart rather than just studying hard, but like, you have to study hard too, I think.
Yeah, but you have to have that dedication. And so that's kind of why I say, like, having that dedication is equally as important as setting the goal.
Yeah, like without dedication, it doesn't matter how big your goal is, it's just a wish. Basically.
Yeah.
But like, I think harder goals are going to make it harder to get that dedication out, basically.
I disagree. But I mean, if it's completely unrealistic, then maybe. But
yeah, that's what I mean. A 1600 SAT.
But I think here's the thing. If the goal is completely unrealistic, then you're lying to yourself, and you know you're not going to be able to do that. And so therefore, you don't put in that work and you don't try that hard. And I think that's maybe so, you know, yeah. But at the same time, I don't know. It's hard to say what Elon's goals are and whether or not they're obtainable or not, or whether they're completely unrealistic. But, you know, because we don't know. We don't know until we get there. But what we can say is that he's definitely doing shit. But anyways, let's get back to this. Yeah. Let's get back to this chart you have.
Yeah. So like, we could go to NASA in a little bit. I think the reason why NASA's not doing so well is because they're not getting a lot of funding. Yeah. So here are the four things that are objectionably good. The debt's gone. Social Security is sustainable. Abortions are basically gone. And unintended pregnancies are basically gone. Here's what the right gets: an end to the income tax, an end to over 99% of abortions, an increase at their retirement age at a, so they also get an increase in their retirement age at a rate of 6 months per year, an end to welfare, military budget goes up with it, gets pinned with to the GDP, it goes up with it and starts out higher, a sales tax instead of an income tax at the federal level. The right's kind of fine with an income tax, or not an income tax, a sales tax in order to help reduce the income tax. Two, I put legalization of all guns nationwide. It has nothing to do with paying off the debt. I just think that all guns should be legal, and it would be fair because to counterbalance the other things that the liberals want. And one, an end to all background checks. Here's what the liberals and conservatives gain. Here's what they lose. Here's their net gain, because I counted these issues as benefiting both parties, the objectionably good issues. So here's what happens in 2020, basically the year that we inherited. So there's a capital gains tax that varies between 0% and 20%. Roughly 331 million people are affected. Here's the sales tax. As you can see, we don't have that. Discretionary sales tax, we don't have that either. An income tax is between 10% and 37%. And a social security tax is at 6.2%. The total amount of revenue generated is a little over $3 trillion. And the percent of GDP going to taxes is roughly 14.6%, which I think that's way too high. So, and I did some math down here to justify the numbers that you see up here. So here's what I would do that is completely different. No income tax, no social security tax, All that we need is a stock of the capital gains tax of 17%, a sales tax on necessity items at 14%, and a sales tax of luxury items at 20%. Now, you notice this column. The reason why the numbers here drastically went up is because what I want America to do is I want America to allow every single person that wants to come into the United States to enter the United States. Gallup came out with a poll that said that roughly 1.2 billion people would permanently move countries if they were allowed to do so. And since America is the land of the free and this helps us become wealthy beyond our wildest dreams, those people get incorporated into the American population. This added population causes our tax revenue to roughly triple while causing the percent of GDP going to taxes being much lower. In other words, we get more tax revenue, but we tax citizens less because there's more citizens to tax. And here's the amount of revenue that, because my plan is that the government would initially pay for the immigrants, it would pay for their airplane tickets and translator fees, but the immigrants pay this back in a year with interest, 10% a year. This generates this amount of money, and here's the total amount of revenue generated. You like my plan so far?
I think it's terrible, honestly. No offense.
It's okay.
Okay, so let me dig into a couple things here. Okay, so first of all, you're talking about almost tripling the federal revenue, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the problem with that. If you think you're going to triple the federal revenue without taxing people harder by adding more people, that means you're going to triple the population.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
To 1 billion people.
Yeah, so, what's wrong with that?
Okay, what would happen if you had 1 billion people in the United States right now? We don't have enough housing or food or resources for that many people. That would be something, obviously, that would have to happen over time, right?
Hold on. I'm taking notes because I know there's a lot of... So you mentioned housing, food, and resources.
For three times as many people, yeah. Because we're talking about taking America from about 300 billion people to the size of China.
Yeah, and I think we could afford all that since America has a better climate than China does anyway.
That doesn't have much to do with it because where do the resources come from?
They come from the private sector. The private sector would sell all this food.
Does America produce enough food to feed 1 billion people?
I mean, I don't know if America does, but the private sector would buy all this food. And if we don't, we just import the food from other countries. It works with Japan just fine.
Okay, so you'd import the food from other countries, but the reason we import the food from other countries is because it's less expensive. Now, if the countries that we're importing this food from, if all of their population gets up and moves to the United States, what's going to happen to the cost of their food production?
It's going to, I mean, I think it would stay, I mean, not everyone's going to move to the United States, just the people who want to are going to move.
So how do you get to your 1 billion population?
Because 1 billion people want to move, not 7 billion.
Right. So this is the thing. You're going to have different countries because, you know, people in Europe probably are going to be less likely to move here. You're probably going to get more people from Asia, South America, and Africa,
basically,
I would think.
Yeah.
So all those people move here. And if that's where we're getting our food from, right? We're not importing a lot of food from Europe. We're importing a lot of food from Asia, from South America, from Mexico.
And Europe, too. If America can't produce all our food, the private sector just negotiates among themselves and they talk and they figure out,
so what happens?
Where are we going to get our excess food? And then they decide some from Africa, some from Europe, some from Asia, some from South America, trade skyrockets and America gets wealthy off of it.
So here's the thing. And this is really like, I can come up with 1 billion what ifs on this, but this is exactly what got government into the hole that it's in the first place. It wants to make assumptions that, hey, we're going to have all these taxes, but all these people are going to come here from other countries who are coming here because they don't have much to begin with. But once they get here, we're going to tax them. But also when they get here, we're not going to have the jobs that they know how to do, which is how to grow food, because they're coming from the countries that are growing the food, but they're moving to a place that doesn't have the farmland or the infrastructure to grow that food. And so, and now the fact that they're not working in the countries where we are getting the food from means that they have a shortage of labor, which means the labor prices are going to go up, which could affect the food prices, which means our food prices are going to go up. So now all these immigrants that just came to the United States who already have a higher cost of living because the United States is more expensive now also have a higher cost of food just to survive. So the problem with this is not necessarily that, like, hey, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, that would maybe work out. The problem with this is we're making plans into the future with all kinds of assumptions, not knowing what the side effects are going to be and not knowing how people are actually going to feed into the system. So that's an enormous problem right there. But I want to go back to this other thing, because you want to collect $10 trillion every year in taxes. Now, I want to bring this up. This number that I said before, $7.5 trillion. That $3.5 trillion that you have there, that's just the federal government. When you add the state governments, all 50 states, you get up to $7.5 trillion. Now, this is the thing. Do you know how much printed money is in circulation?
True, by the way. I mean, like, the federal government taxes way more than the states do, I think.
They don't have property tax. All your property tax is local. All your sales tax is local. All your licenses, driver's licenses, fees.
That's not the state doing it. That's the city doing it.
It's cities, it's counties, it's states, it's everything. There are many different levels of government. But what happens at the state and local levels, add that to your $3.5 trillion, and you've got $7.5 trillion. That's how much all of the governments in the entire United States take in, $7.5 trillion. But here's the thing.
Yeah, but I'm talking about just the federal government right now. Other states would tax their citizens as they see fit. However, the federal government would actually be providing people a tax cut, because as you see up here,
how would it provide them a tax cut if you're going to triple the revenue?
Because our population would quadruple. So that saves everybody money, since more people are paying the bill.
So you want to introduce four times as many people, not three times. And so...
Yeah, basically.
Okay, but here's the thing. If the federal government is already providing all these things to people, it's providing retirement, it's providing healthcare, it's providing police, it's providing fire departments. If it's going to provide that for four times as many people, doesn't it have to spend four times as much money providing those services?
Actually, I did the calculations below. Some things go up with population, some things stay relatively constant. For example, two major things that would stay that wouldn't quadruple with the population are, one, the military budget, because we don't have to spend nearly as much on the military in terms of percentages of GDP. And another one is Social Security, and I did the calculations down below. So hang on.
I want to get back to this point, because we're still talking about $10 trillion, right, at the federal level. The states, if the states quadruple their population, they're going to see that as an opportunity to triple their income as well. So let's not multiply that $3.5 trillion to $10.5 trillion. Let's multiply the $7.5 trillion to $22.5 trillion. So now you're going to collect $22.5 trillion every year from this new population that's four times as big. How much money is there in circulation?
I mean, I don't even know if your assumptions are inherently accurate, because...
Fine, my numbers are totally wrong. How much money is in circulation?
Currently there's around $22 trillion in the United States. Nope. However, way more...
Nope. Where'd you get that number from?
U.S. GDP. Hold on.
That's GDP. That's measuring a dollar as it exchanges hands 10 times and counting it as $10. If I spend a dollar on you and then you spend a dollar on me, we have just increased the GDP by $2.
But I think
how much money is in circulation. That's how many times the money changes hands.
Yeah, but I don't think that's true. Otherwise, the GDP is the average annual salary times the number of people in the nation. So that means if we bring four times as many people in here, assuming they earn the same amount as a typical American, then that means our GDP is going to quadruple pretty quickly.
Okay, I want you to look up, pull up your browser. You're already in your browser. Go to Google and search for the M1 report.
Is this it?
This is, scroll down, see if you see a graph or some numbers. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, this.
Okay, this is the M1 report.
So wait, according to this report, it said here in September. Oh wait. Oh, I thought like this was the more recent date. So it says here that the inflation rate is going up by roughly 1%.
Right, but I want you
every
to focus. I want you to focus on the M1, and I want you to focus on currency and circulation.
Yeah, this is currency and circulation.
Currency and circulation is $1.7 trillion.
Yeah, and then it went up 1% roughly, or 2/3% in a year.
2/3%. How long is it going to take you at 2/3% to get to $24 trillion, which is the debt?
I think the reason why it's even going up to begin with is because our population's growing.
Forget it.
Up,
forget so. About the inflation. I mean, it's going up because they're printing money.
Yeah, it's going up because our they're printing
right.
money.
But forget about the fact that they're printing money. How much money is in circulation? And actually, if you scroll down to the bottom, these are more recent numbers. They got the
roughly $2 trillion in circulation. Which, how is that even true? That would mean the average American has like $6,000.
The average American is $60,000 in debt.
How is that even? I'd expect college grads to be $60,000 in debt, not
because when you buy a house, when you buy your first house and you're 30 years old, you take on $100,000 worth of debt.
So it's from the house, basically.
It's a lot more than that. There's consumer credit. People get credit cards. Ooh, free money. And then they go out and buy things like TVs. They buy cars. Some people buy cars every other year just because they want to have a new car. At the end of the day, they've spent thousands of dollars every year to end up with nothing, because at the end of this constantly pouring money into having a new car, they still don't own the car. They've been leasing it the whole time. So all of this stuff is putting people into debt. 88, you can look up these stats. I believe it's 88% of the country has an average of $60,000 in debt per household, It's insane. This is a nation of debt. It is built on debt. The country itself is what, $27 trillion in debt now? Here's another fun fact. Go look up the amount of known gold in existence, because as much as we don't have a gold-backed currency, but the world still operates on gold.
So this amount of gold has been discovered. I have no idea how much it's worth.
So take that 244,000 tons. This is going to be interesting for everyone that's watching. And convert
that. Is anyone watching?
Yes. Convert that to ounces.
So tons.
Convert tons to ounces.
So this will do it to kilograms. This will do it to grams.
Whoa. No, hold on.
Yeah, this is metric tons. So yeah, kilograms, grams. And then, so there's roughly 244 billion grams of gold in existence.
Should come out to about 10. Okay, hold on. So you converted, that's in, you're in grams now?
Yeah.
Okay, and go back up to ounces. How many ounces is that?
Yeah, I divide by 28. Because there's roughly that many ounces in a gram.
There you go. Okay, so what's that?
The metric system would have made this so much easier.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, no, hold on a second. You had it in grams. Let's leave it in, or go to kilograms. No.
Kilograms is this.
Okay. Let's do this. Okay, I'm going to look up the price, cuz they list the price of gold per kilogram.
I thought they do it per gram and per ounce. That's it.
I mean, like you said, with metric, you just multiply it to 1,000 and you know gram and ounce. But
yeah,
some markets list it by kilogram for some reason. Yes, here we go. Okay, so right now it is 59,290 per.
What was that? 59,290?
Yeah, 59,290 per kilogram.
Okay. So yeah, 10 kilograms of gold is probably worth more than your house.
Yeah, but how much is that?
This many dollars. I could divide it by a million, then we know how many millions of dollars it is.
Okay.
1,000 million.
Let's do that again to get it in billions.
Okay, you want to do it again and get it into trillions?
Well, we know it is in trillion, 14 trillion.
14, and what's the national debt?
27 trillion.
So how are you going to pay off a national debt of 27 trillion if you could collect all of the world's gold? We're talking about privately held gold. We're talking about government held gold, everything. And you still could barely pay off half of it.
Because gold's not the only resource. Some resources are finite amount like gold.
But we're talking about debt that has to be paid to specific people. A lot of it has to go to the Federal Reserve. A lot of it has to go to foreign nations who are holding bonds. They're not going to let you pay them in cotton.
I mean, they want it paid in dollars. So, and people are a resource. Dollars are a resource. Gold's a resource. There's so many resources.
Well, we just looked at how many dollars were in circulation.
Yeah, it was how many? Like 2 trillion?
Two trillion in circulation. And if you look at the M1 report, that's actually how much printed money there is. So look back at the first column. 6 trillion. 6.6 trillion.
Where do you see that?
The second column.
Oh, here, M1.
So the M1 report. The M1 report is how much money is actually in existence. How much U.S. currency is in existence? So that's 6 trillion. Out of that 6 trillion, only 2 trillion is in circulation.
Just said 6 trillion was in circulation.
No, 6 trillion is printed.
Wait, what's the difference? Because I'm taking
because if it's sitting in a bank vault, it's not in circulation.
So you're saying 2/3 of dollars are in circulation? That seems a little low to me.
One third is in circulation. And I heard there was some other, I don't remember where I heard this, something like 90% of U.S. currency isn't even in the United States. It's in places like Saudi Arabia. It's in vaults in foreign countries.
Like Ecuador uses the dollar.
Like what?
Ecuador uses the dollar.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like if, the U.S. dollar used to be backed by gold. And when it was, the United States Treasury had gold in their vaults. And then they would issue the dollars. And eventually anyone who really wanted the gold could go back to the Treasury and say, okay, here's the dollar, give me the gold. What other countries do, because the dollar is so amazingly strong, is other countries will say, hey, we want to issue a currency, but we don't want to deal with gold because we're not that big of a nation and we don't have those kinds of resources. So instead of backing our currency with gold, we're going to back it with the dollar. So we're going to take dollars and instead of filling up our vault with gold, we're going to fill it up with dollars. So now you have a currency that's backed by the dollar.
Okay.
So you have a lot of dollars from that M1 report that are sitting in vaults. And then you have a lot of people who are just, you know, saving it for a rainy day, whatever. You've got bank vaults. You've got Federal Reserve that has money just sitting there that's not going to be used. Not a whole lot. But that's what that report is. That's what these numbers are. So,
okay.
So now check this out. Go back to the... Go back to that same thing. But look at the second to the last column. No, go back to the Fed. The one we're just looking at, the M1 report.
It's not working. There we go.
Yeah, it's the government. Of course it wouldn't work. Okay, so look at the second to the last.
Total M in borrowings.
Total borrowings and non-borrowed reserves. So total borrowings is 58,000.
I don't know if you could see. Oh, never mind. I don't know. Yeah, total in reserves is 58 trillion.
That's total borrowings.
That's 58 billion.
If you click on that little question mark at the very top, it'll tell you what that means. Footnote 7. Oh, that's not a question mark. That's a 7. Click it and see what it says at the bottom. Let me see. I got it up over here. Footnote 7. Total borrowings in millions of dollars.
I'm not there yet.
From the Federal Reserve. So that's how much money has been borrowed from the Federal Reserve.
I'm surprised it's not more. I mean, the deficit's $1 trillion.
Right, but the Federal Reserve doesn't lend just to the government. So this also says that there's $60 trillion owed to the Federal Reserve, and this is all the money that the Federal Reserve has been lending to other businesses.
This is $60 billion.
Was it in millions?
Yeah, it says millions right here.
Yep, you're right.
But it's every month, so December 2020, November 2020.
Well, that's the total as of that date.
No, so it isn't, because it's from here. This one's more than this one.
Let me see. Total borrowings. Yeah, no, this is total borrowings at that time.
No, I mean, it says total borrowings for this month. Total borrowings for December.
Let me see this again. Total borrowing. It doesn't say for this month. It says total borrowings in millions of dollars from the Federal Reserve are borrowings from the discount windows, primary, secondary, and seasoned credit programs, and other borrowing from emergency lending facilities. For borrowings included, see loans on this table.
Where are you reading that?
That's the footnote from number 7.
Seven? Okay.
So it's not per month, it's the total at that time. If that was per month, that would be really bad.
I thought it was per... Well, if it's total, is this the chart?
But regardless, it's this is money lent to corporations. This is money lent to banks so that they can lend to individuals. This money backs up all kinds of credit. What's interesting is if you look at February 2020, it was only 3.2.
Well, which that's is interesting because of COVID.
Exactly. But August of 2019, it was 116, and somehow it was going down as we approached February, and then it just skyrocketed up after that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's related to COVID, but at the same time, see, this is the problem. This is the COVID problem. Everybody thinks, oh my God, I don't have a job. How am I going to survive? But the reality is that should never be part of the question. The reason that people are in trouble when they lose their jobs is because they're all in debt. Imagine if everybody in the country had savings. Imagine if they all owned their homes. They didn't have to pay rent. They didn't have to pay property tax. They didn't have to do any of these things. Imagine if most of the farm work had been replaced by machines so that they didn't need as many people to grow the food. Imagine if the big corporate farms didn't take over all the little farms and you still had a bunch of small farms that were producing most of the food. We'd have a lot fewer problems today. People wouldn't be borrowing money to get by. And so this is kind of the problem you were trying to solve, right? Because you want to pay off the debt, or at least you want to get everybody out of debt.
I want to get the U.S. out of debt. I don't want to bail out individuals or corporations with federal funds.
Right. The problem is you're creating a plan, and I know this isn't your intent. You have a very, very noble cause that you want to fight for, right? You want to get America out of debt, which is great. The country shouldn't have debt. The individuals shouldn't have debt either, which is a completely separate issue.
Yeah.
But in creating this plan and in increasing taxes, you're taking more money out of the pockets of people who would otherwise be able to put that into their savings. You're creating a plan using central planning, which is exactly how we got into this mess in the first place, because the government thinks it's wise enough to plan out all the little intricacies of the economy, but it's not. It fails every single time. Most of the times when it creates a program, it has the exact opposite effect because they don't know all the things that are going to happen. And so as noble as your cause is, there are too many things for you to ever know for you to create a plan and say, this is how we're going to get there. When there's, you know, you're not just factoring in what you're going to do and what a couple of businesses are going to do. You're talking about what 350 million people are going to do, or now times four, 1.2 billion people are going to do, and whether or not they're going to follow the plan, whether or not things are going to go, you know, as you expect for the next, you know, for the next however many years it takes to pay off this debt. And you're also taking in, you're not taking into consideration the fact that it is literally impossible to pay off the debt, because that type of money and resource just doesn't exist. The only way to pay off that debt is basically to give ownership of everything in the country over to the Federal Reserve, which is absolute nonsense. So to try to pay it off, all you're going to do is you're going to tax the people harder. You're going to slow down. Oh, we lost him. Well, that sucks. I'll just finish what I was saying. You're going to tax the people harder. You're going to make it harder for them to earn a living. You're going to slow down the economy. You're going to make things terrible for everybody. And you're never going to pay off the debt. Because, and we see this all the time, right? Whenever they create these new programs, they're like, yeah, we're gonna raise more taxes. And then, but then oh, we're raising more taxes. We have more money. Let's create new programs. So they start spending more, and then they start borrowing more, because they can't make their payments. This is the way it always works. In fact, the way that the banks work is the more money you make, the more money they will lend you. So it is not the intent of any banking system to ever have you pay off your debt. That's just not how it's designed. It is designed for there to be more debt so that they can consistently from month to month earn free money through interest. That's what the system is. Thank you, DCO, for making that conversion, because I was totally like, yeah, the metric ton thing, like, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that until just now. A metric ton, I knew a ton is 2,000 pounds. I didn't know a metric ton is 1,000 kilograms. For some reason, I always figured a metric ton had to be some other weird multiplier. So that's good to know. I know that now. I'm smarter because of this show. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for joining. I hope you guys learned something. This show started out as I was going to debate somebody on... Oh. I didn't press send on the tweet where I tagged him, but I did send him a direct message. So there's that. And he didn't respond to that. And I had been telling him about this show for the past week. So let me just start this out by telling you a little bit about this guy, because he sent me a message. This is really interesting, because this is why I started this show called Debate Me, You Coward. This guy named Ron Combs, he had been posting some like ambiguously sarcastic comments on my Twitter. What I mean by that is like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Now, if you read that in text, oh yeah, that sounds great, or oh yeah, that sounds great. I couldn't tell if he was being sarcastic or not. Maybe he really liked it, until he sent me this message. Ron Combs, fake account. What do you think the chances are of the following statement being true, such as 2% chance or 25% chance, etc., etc.? Here is the statement. Dan Berman understands virtually nothing of how socialism works, and his assumptions about socialism come from an American propaganda system. Okay. Now, I could have responded to him calling him an idiot or any number of names, but I didn't. Instead, I told him this. I've learned about it from socialists and communists. We have our agreements and our disagreements, but we have had productive conversations where we both learned from each other. One of the most important things is that socialism and capitalism mean different things to different people. And that's why I don't advocate capitalism anymore. But this little quip you have here shows that you don't understand much about what I understand or what socialism is. Otherwise, you might have sent me a message telling me exactly what I misunderstand. Instead, you took the low road and went straight to, you don't understand capitalism. Excuse me, socialism. I keep saying socialism. And excuse me for the mockery voice, but, you know. If you really think that there's one form of socialism and that I don't get it, then feel free to get in line. And then I sent him a link. Debate me, you coward. He replies, you blustering fool. One point at a time. I responded to your challenge on the Twitter feed, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so now he starts getting into this thing about how, oh, I responded to you and... Okay, this little fake account that he has, whenever he comments, it's always under the section, click here for more tweets. So it's like it's hidden, like Twitter thinks this guy's like spam, right? And I'm not going to follow him because I'm not going to give him the pleasure until he comes on and debates me, right? But anyways, he hasn't said a single thing. He keeps going, hey, why don't you tell me what socialism is? Why don't you tell me what socialism is? After I explained to him, socialism means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And that's exactly why I won't tell him what socialism is, because no matter what I say, he's probably going to say that's wrong. Because one, he obviously wants to prove that I'm wrong, and he'll probably say anything, and he'll probably like misinterpret whatever I say as whatever. But also because he might believe in a form of socialism that's completely different from any form I might describe. In any form I might describe, I already know there are other socialists that would disagree with it. So, whatever. I challenge this guy. He's all up in my Twitter. So if you see him, his name is at Ron Duco, R-O-N-D-U-C-O. If you see him on my Twitter, make sure you tell him to debate me, you coward. Because I really would like to have the guy on the show and see what he has to say. I want to apologize for anything you might have heard on the show that sounded a little bit statist. My good friend was here. I wasn't sure if Ron was going to come, so I put the link up so anybody could click and get into the Zoom. A couple people showed up. One got in. We talked for a great bit of time on some really, really good points that he brought up. I don't know if that's how I should phrase that, but he had a lot of things that I disagreed with, but we had a great conversation. Hopefully I taught him some things. Somebody else wants to join in. Cadet Sergeant. Oh, let's see what this is all about. All right, before we go, here's one more. Cadet Sergeant, welcome. We're just wrapping up the show, but I wanted to let you in because you're here. So we got 5 minutes. You're on mute. You're going to have to unmute. Or maybe he just tuned in to get a closer view of the live stream. I don't know. All right. Well, if you're not going to talk, I'm going to end the show. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being a part of this. Make sure to like and subscribe and follow. Yeah, Cadet Sergeant just disappeared. Maybe he was having connection issues. Who knows? I see that all the time. Make sure to like and share the show as far as the eye can see. Make sure if you find somebody who doesn't agree with libertarianism or anarchy or any of the things that I talk about, make sure to invite them to the show so that they can debate me. And make sure you head over. If you haven't listened to this on the podcast, this is a podcast, actually. I know you're all watching from the live stream. But if you go to the podcast, you can get the podcast. You can get the subscription thing and it updates in your phone all the time. Just go to wherever you get your podcasts and type in Taxation is Theft and look for the big black and yellow or for me with the big black and yellow hat. Make sure to subscribe to that. And of course, go check out Nug of Knowledge, nugofknowledge.com. 50 state legal diet weed. Yes, I called it diet weed. It's not weed, it's diet weed. It's CBD'd. CB weed. I don't know. But it's really awesome stuff. And they have Delta 8 vape cartridges, which is like everybody's saying it's like THC. All right, guys. I will catch you next time. Taxation is Theft.